Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwintelligence podcast. Thanks to Marver not being available ever, we decided to record a special episode tonight. It was a big day in Padres baseball. Another loss, but another day full of, excitement that will really rally the team. So we brought in my neighbor, Woe Doctor, back on the podcast again, which, lucky for you, Leisure Fryer out there is going to be very upset about this.
Oh, he's going to ban this podcast.
He is going to fire H.J. Preller.
He's going to fire H.J. Preller. He's going to boycott you, and man, he's going to block me.
It's over.
Oh, it's over.
It's over.
Yeah. And he's really not going to like what I have to say about today, along with a lot of other people.
I don't think a lot of people are, actually. No. So obviously today, you know, the team lost, but that doesn't matter. Nothing matters. No. Padres baseball does not matter.
They took the series, and that's what matters.
They did. It could, and from what I read from Kevin Acey today, it could turn the season around, the way that it's brought the team together.
Yeah, it could definitely turn the season around. There's nothing better to, you know, turn things around when you have a guy that was on the bubble to get sent down to AAA last week, probably missing starts, and also only gaining experience and veteran presence and leadership.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, it really involved two players that were pretty much on the edge, because A.J. Ellis was obviously involved in the brawl today.
We're all about leadership on this team. That's why they're all here.
So let's talk about this. So
yeah,
obviously there's been, you know, a lot of hit by pitches.
Yeah.
This year, between
the Rockies have been bad about it. Let's be honest.
Yeah, where did this come from Buddy? Like, where was this fire when he was here?
I watched the Milton Bradley takedown.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that was a nice suplex.
He's more overt now. That's more. He has his contract. He's good. He's not subtle.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Coors Field is a tough place to pitch, right?
Yeah.
And so, teaching your pitchers to pitch aggressively and inside is a fair tactic, I'd argue.
I'd argue you kind of have to do that to survive at Coors. And also, I mean, they've kind of had to reinvent the way that they develop their pitching staff. So, I mean, I wouldn't read too much into it, although there are some that looked really bad. The Margot one the other day
looked bad. But you think that was deliberate?
I don't think it was deliberate. It just looks bad. And granted, it's like what Dustin was saying earlier, that at some point you have to curb it, and how do you do that? Well, I mean, Andy Green's going to get a lot of credit for, or in certain circles will get a lot of credit, along with A.J. Ellis and Perdomo, for really taking the initiative and not letting them get bullied. But, I mean, all he had to do was kind of raise a concern or maybe get on the top step of the dugout. That's what I don't understand about this, is that he let, how many was it, five or six? I can't remember. I think it was five. Something like that.
What, hit by pitches?
Yeah.
I think it was six.
It was six. Yeah. Okay. So he let six go by before he let something happen, which is he threw behind Arenado and this whole thing.
And I mean,
I don't really think he solved anything. He created a bigger brouhaha. So.
Well, I think it's fair to say, I don't know if Andy Green called for it.
No,
I read his comments after the game, and he doesn't sound, to me, it didn't sound, he wasn't all behind it like Mark McGwire's looked like he was.
No.
Or some other people. I don't think McGwire gave a quote, but
no. But I mean, like, you can kind of tell when people are out there who's getting involved. Exactly. And I mean, there's certain guys. I mean, we're going to hear quotes from Hosmer and Ellis. For instance, when that pop fly dropped in the infield, the 20-foot game-winning pop-up, we're going to hear a lot about people taking credit for their mistakes and things like that, or saying the right things or doing the right things. And the problem with that is that they can say and do the right things per baseball circles, but they don't make much sense so far as actually resolving any issues. And this is one of those cases. This doesn't stop them from being bullied. It calls attention to it because they threw at somebody. But beyond that, I mean, it doesn't prevent them from being bullied. They were on the brink of sweeping a series in Colorado. And directly after this, I mean, I'm not saying it's cause and effect, but for everyone that wants to say, like, this is going to spur some kind of change for the rest of the season, directly after this, the Rockies scored five runs. So it didn't solve anything.
Well, off of a pitcher that they said was very into the brawl. Like,
yeah.
Very, I mean, very, very involved with it. So.
It's just, it makes no sense to me. So to me, this is nonsense. I always hate when this kind of stuff happens. And we can kind of laugh at some of the aspects of it, like Perdomo throwing his glove and just straight up whiffing, or running away, and There are some really funny
things. Even if
about
it connected with the glove, does that make it better? Like, I kind of think like throwing Galvis? The glove. I think throwing the gloves. Well, Galvis connected because he threw it while Arenado wasn't looking.
Oh, it's just range, like. But is it Tyler Austin in the later game?
I think so. Yeah.
So he made contact, I believe, by blindly punching into a dog pile and hitting the third base coach in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really heroic. So it's going to get him some credit in some circles. I just don't understand. I think it's hilarious, personally. I don't think it solved anything, and it certainly is not going to spur anything. It might help certain guys maybe see things eye to eye where they previously didn't, but by and large, it got a guy removed from the game, it taxed a bullpen, and it didn't help them win that game or
right. The series. I mean, so. They got bailed out that Simber was so good today.
Yeah.
Because it could have been a lot worse if they'd blown through six pitchers today.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's a plus. So I'm not a pacifist on this.
No, no.
I was not one of the people. There's a lot of people on Padres Twitter that, you know, after the Rizzo thing last year, are like, well, it's so dumb to retaliate. I'm not really totally on that side. Like, no. I'm kind of in the middle, but.
Well, I mean, I'd say I'm kind of in the middle on that. I thought it was dumb in that it doesn't do anything to hit him afterwards. It doesn't prevent him from doing that in the future. Like, the spotlight was on him. The problem was that Major League Baseball didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole idea that they have to police each other is nonsense, because all it does is create more problems down the road. Similarly to this, like, I don't think the problem is that, I think the problem is that Major League Baseball won't get involved or do anything to curb this. And I don't know how you solve that, but I certainly don't think policing it by themselves is doing anything.
Right.
So it's just ridiculous to me. And yeah, and causing more physical violence, I think it's idiocy.
Well,
I just think it's dumb, personally.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm talking to someone that used to pitch, and I've thrown at people before, and I used to think it was awesome.
It was awesome.
I mean, you're God, and you have a baseball in your hand. But I mean, all it does is it makes you mad, and you bond for about 10 minutes with your team, and then after that, I mean, I felt terrible about it since then, and this is like 15 years past when it actually happened. So
I mean, you didn't injure anyone, right?
No, I went in.
Were you throwing junk?
No, I threw a fastball in someone's ribs. It was not good. He was using a bunch of gay slurs out when I was in the field.
Yeah.
And so they brought me in the last inning, and I hit him and then struck out the next two guys.
Hopefully it was someone from Carlsbad High School.
It was someone from La Costa Canyon.
I don't remember
who it was. And actually, I used to play on a baseball team with him, and he's actually a nice guy. Not the guy that was doing the gay slurs, but the guy I struck out and was jawing at after. So, yeah, I just hate it. It makes me seem like a jerk in retrospect. So,
I mean, it's something where, like, it's not a long-lasting effect. Like, the way AC wrote his article today, he makes it sound like, you know, in September, they're going to really remember this day. But it's
that,
not...
That part's nonsense.
I think Hosmer was like, you know, Hosmer, one of the players, was like, you know, there's a lot of milestones in the year, and this is now going to be one of those milestone tent post incidents. And it's a thing that... If they come out against the Giants, you know, tomorrow and the day after, and they lose those two games, it's over.
Yeah,
in fact, just arguably, if they lose tomorrow, it's over.
I mean, I would argue it was over the moment they gave up five runs. Like, I just don't get it.
That was a really bad way to finish the inning.
Well, it's just, this is how we don't get bullied. Immediately get bullied.
Yeah, and also have Gerardo Parra just get a clean shot on AL.
God.
The only real punch thrown and landed was by the Rockies against the Padres. So it's not really...
Yeah.
I mean, they lost the fight, right?
I mean, and that's
if we were scoring it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I'm not scoring it. I think it's ridiculous all the way around, and I think everyone involved is kind of... They look childish. I mean, that includes the Rockies. But, I mean, if you're going to score it from the alpha male standpoint, the Padres lost every aspect of that fight.
Yes.
And if you're counting moral victories, then you're back to square one, right? At that point, you're talking about things that are absolutely incalculable, and you're kind of looking for reasons to believe this was justifiable. And that's really what I think this is. I think it's absurd.
But what if it brought them together and that's what caused Eric Hosmer to hit his first home run today?
Oh, I take it all back.
He sounded very giddy from the quotes I read.
What did he say? Now I'm a Padre, I think was his quote.
Yes, now I'm a Padre.
Now I'm a Padre.
He has not been the last nine games, apparently.
No,
But
now he's
games,
off the schneid, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. No, and that's the funny thing, is that he says everything the right way, and I don't begrudge Eric Hosmer. He is a certain kind of baseball player that I don't necessarily, I wouldn't consider myself a big fan, but he's a pretty good one, and he's a little bit out there and type A, but I mean, this is ridiculous.
I was pretty clear that I didn't want him signed, and I was upset after, yeah. And he's a pretty good, I mean, he's hit pretty well. He's not hitting home runs, but I don't care that much about the home runs.
I think it was, and I don't mean to call him out here because I totally looked it up because I kind of figured the same thing, but I think it was Billy called him out for hitting a lot of ground balls in the Houston series because he was
watching him in
Houston. And I looked it up, and like at the exact moment that I looked it up, he had an identical 135 WRC plus that he had last year. I thought that was really funny. And the big difference is that he's actually hitting like garbage when he hits ground balls, and he's hitting a lot of them, but he's not hitting any fly balls. He was hitting a ton of liners.
Right.
And his liners are the ones that get him hits. I mean, they generally are, but...
He's what we wanted Alonso to be, Yonder Alonso.
Yeah.
Because the big thing with Alonso is he was a left-handed bat, and the story was he would hit doubles into the gap other way.
He was what you hoped he could fill the shoes of Adrian Gonzalez.
Yes.
We can go the other way. Yeah. And he would hit a lot of liners, and he kind of played the gaps, and he wore them out.
Right.
And that's, I mean, I wouldn't say that I distrust Hosmer as an offensive player. I just think that this whole thing has been blown out of proportion in general. He's good.
He's good, yeah.
He's not very good on defense, and so to see people freak out about the one that went over his head, and we can talk about that for probably a couple days too. But I mean, today, for example, Spangenberg throws that ball that's on the wrong side of the bag, and not a good throw by him. Not an easy play to make, but he just straight up whiffed the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like it was in the dirt, and it hit the heel of his glove. And yeah, I get that he doesn't want to stand in front of an oncoming base runner, but the footwork looked bad.
It's part of the job.
Yeah, well, I mean, and the footwork was just bad. I mean, we used to kind of insult Yonder Alonso for looking like he had no idea how to put his foot on the bag.
Right.
And he looks very similar in that regard. And I'm not saying that he's bad at certain aspects of his defensive job, but he looks pretty uncomfortable over there. And that could be for any slew of reasons. Maybe I end up being completely wrong, but I mean, he's got a history of not being so great there.
Right. So, well, it's always been like an eye test versus stats argument, but I'm using my
eye. I mean, the eye test is good on things like digging the ball out of the dirt.
Right.
But like, and that's arguably kind of one of the easier aspects of that job too, I would say.
Yeah.
For a first baseman anyway. And not that that's easy, like I can't do it, but major leaguers generally can, even if you're not very good.
So. I mean, I also think defense at first base is one of the less important ones, but we're starting to see cases where it is affecting games.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to say it was a couple games ago where it was on like a pickoff that kicked off his glove. Like there's quite a few just little snafus that.
Yeah. And I mean, perhaps this is all just complete, like a minor blip on the radar screen. Maybe his offense is enough to carry it like it has been for, you know, two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm certainly not saying he's not worth the money, because he is if he continues to hit like this and he's his regular defensive self. But like, I just don't get the thing where we're basically playing up his leadership role the same as we are AJ Ellis, and I think it's ridiculous. I think we're just making...
Especially AJ Ellis. Yeah. Like, we're talking about a guy on
this is more just
who
me.
Came into camp on a minor league contract.
This is more just me finding an excuse to bitch about AJ Ellis.
God,
I really don't like
AJ Ellis.
Yeah. He gives great scoops. I mean, like, Molly Knight's book would not be great without him, I'm sure, nor would, like, Dylan Hernandez's, you know, coverage for the Dodgers or anybody else for that matter. But, yeah, he's just garbage.
If AC wrote good columns, it would probably be because of AJ Ellis.
He gave two great quotes today. He's totally contradictory, but they were great.
he's I'm Switzerland.
I'm Switzerland. But, you know, we won't be bullied. What? Okay.
Well, he did get punched in the face, so...
Like, he did get bullied, yeah.
Yeah. To get pushed around a little bit.
Man, it's tons of material on this.
Yeah. You brought up that fly ball to the pop-up on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I was watching it. I was hooked on sushi in Encinitas. So it was like out of the corner of my eye, and I started getting texts about it. Because it was I missed it live, and then I saw the replay and realized exactly what was happening. And
I watched it live and literally broke down, cry laughing.
Yeah.
I was
I mean,
hysterical.
It was the most Padres way to lose.
I brought my wife in to watch it, and she knows that. So we have cable again, and one of the only reasons I did it is because I figured I'd watch the Padres a lot more.
Yeah,
which I kind of have. I've watched them, I think, like 6 times, which is more than I could have said the previous years where I watch a lot of other baseball teams. But anyway, so
thanks to MLB blackout rules. And
well, I had ad-free TV for a while, but, you know, there's other options at 7 p.m. But no, my favorite is the 2 games that I remember distinctly sitting down to watch after work. That game, and then I also watched the, what was the other embarrassing
the
loss?
The Braun home run. Offhand.
Yeah. So I sat through that bloodbath too. Yeah. And those are the 2 that I distinctly remember sitting down like, now I can relax and enjoy my evening. And that's what happens when I relax and enjoy my evening.
Yeah. It leads to a lot of beer consumption. That's what I've gathered myself.
Probably why I work in this industry, yeah. But that was painful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of that, I was joking about it on Twitter, but how much money do you think Green Flash blew on Lexus dugout
club? I think you're right. I think you're right on that. It was what? It's like 25K?
There's probably a volume discount, I would say, if you buy the full season. I think they had 4.
Wow.
I was told they had 4, and I heard...
That sounds about right.
One person told me 3 years. I know for sure they had it 2 years.
Yeah, they had it for 2. I know that for a fact.
So you do the math, and even if you cut them a discount, like 175K. Cool. I mean, you work at a brewery. Like, it's not a high margin business, right? Like, companies barely get by, and Green Flash has debt to service when you have investors
it might not seem like much because you can just throw that away and you don't really see the numbers behind it, but whenever you see that, and I heard, maybe you can correct me on this, I heard that basically the only rule for getting those seats was you just had to wear the Green Flash shirt.
Yeah,
so they just sent them there, which is genius. I mean, like, you actually get... That's marketing, I suppose. Every single pitch, you get to see a Green Flash
to a very small audience.
Yeah, maybe some people thought it was worth it.
It never made me want to drink their beer, but I did see comment on the logo.
For example, just to give you an idea of the difference here, we have season tickets to goals games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, this is much smaller, and they're obviously hockey fans, but this is like a minor league hockey team where I would argue good seats there for a season. I mean, it's like going to Storm games. We know the difference.
Right.
It's pennies. I mean, we're talking hundreds of dollars.
Are they also business partners? I mean, like, is your beer served there?
No.
No.
That costs money, just, man. Okay. There's some licensing deals there. No. So, I mean, I understand the pros and cons of that, but it's a ton of money. And, oh,
God. I was going to ask that, too. Like, so Green Flash had their beer sold at the stadium. They are gone. Yeah. In fact, the two breweries most in distress financially... Man. Are both the two that are gone from Petco this year. That's Mission and Green Flash. Mission went in big a few years ago.
Yeah.
Like, you remember they had all those...
I mean, if you can see can see them from the ballpark, I mean, yeah, you'd imagine they're going big.
Yeah. But they were one of the most present breweries. The home plate. They had, the little... Like, Carl Strauss used to have those trolley things there. Trolley-looking stands. And then they converted those over to Mission when the root beer craze happened.
That's right. Oh man, the hard root beer. And Mission went big.
I mean, that was a terrible business decision on their part also, but
root beer thing, your father's. Oh, yeah. God. Those guys just beat them out.
Yeah. And then they built a condo building in between Petco and Mission and cut them off from the stadium. But So I looked at it and I saw the 2 failing breweries were partners with the Padres. Yeah. Like, it's not a money-winning thing to have your beer there.
I've talked to people that have their beer there, and it is a ton of money. You're basically doing it, and I think I tried to explain this on Twitter when me and you were discussing it.
Yeah.
It's basically, you have to do it for one of 3 reasons. If there's like the marketing edge, which I don't understand, I don't think it would be worth it personally. But I mean, like, you could argue that if you're going to have your beer there and you want to cut a deal and you wanted to be visible, that's a way to do it. The other one is you're just kind of a legacy brewery. So you've got someone like Stone, for example, and it kind of sells itself, and it's almost a destination type thing.
Yeah.
But
even Stone got out quick.
Well,
They went big for the year.
Weren't they in there because they were getting kind of a sweetheart deal, or is rumor conjecture?
I don't know. I mean, they had their large thing on the 300 level.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, they have one right outside the park, so there's no point anyway, in my opinion. But I mean, the big thing is you've got those 2, and then the last reason is you're just a fan. You want to be there because it's super cool, which I actually kind of get. It's not a great business decision, But I mean, if you have a little bit of money to waste or you don't really see it.
Yeah, you can write it off.
You could write it off or do something like that. I mean, for example, if you look at Pizzaport, Pizzaport does multiple trips down there where they take the bus down mm-hmm. and they have the big tailgate. You drink the tailgate lot and it's a super good deal. I think for $60 you get like at the pub drinking on the bus, drinking at the tailgate lot, yeah. eating the entire time, and they make great food. And then you go and you have good seats too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm surprised anyone could watch a baseball game after that, but it's a super good deal, and that's something they've done for years. So I can understand the appeal of trying to get in there. And also, right. nothing cooler than buying a Tallboy Kook for $10 there. That's like the best deal in the
book. I was going to get into that. This is something a fan of the podcast 3B Zine discussed yeah. last week, but they talked about the best values in the park, mm-hmm. and I generally agree with them. I mean, they basically yeah. said that the cans, the 16-ounce cans, yeah. are the best value. Assuming you select stuff, the right can, because yeah. if you choose, like, I don't even know what they have in cans, honestly. If you choose Ponto.
They have all of the, I think they have all of their core ones. So they have Grandview, they have Ponto, I believe they have Pick Six. I want to say
I think they have Pick Six, yeah.
Yeah, and then they have Chronic and Kook.
Yeah, so you choose Chronic, not a great value.
No.
But you choose Kook. It also depends on how you're judging value.
They do have Swamis too.
Yes, they have Swamis. Yeah.
So maybe they don't have Pick Six.
But if you're looking at it as how do I get drunk for the least amount of money?
Oh, I mean,
Kook is up there. Well, Speedway was up there when they had it.
Yeah, I just like Kook better than most of the other canned offerings.
Yeah, it's great.
Although Pano is like one of my only session IPAs I can drink.
Well, I learned that it's not cool to drink session IPAs.
No, it's definitely not cool. Definitely not cool. Coachman, see, that's why they're genius at Society. They call it a small IPA, so you don't have that stigma.
It's fine. Ponto is fine.
It's fine.
It's $9 for a six-pack of 16-ounce beers. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, it's actually a good deal.
It tastes good. It's fine. It's refreshing. Nice summer beer.
There you go. Man, you're going to get... Caps for Days is going to have you for this one.
I know. Well, I mean, I've got a nice keg of... Mason Jambi right now. That's
free advertising.
Yeah.
See, we're talking advertising.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I mean, the good people at Ruler have been very good to this podcast as our semi-official brewery. But
I'm enjoying a Murkrider and double IPA right now.
Yeah, I'm
it's open. Really good.
It is good, right?
I like
it's it. It's their one-year anniversary can.
And someone that's not on the haze craze, I like it. Like you said, though, not that hazy.
And I think he tried to make, I think he would have preferred it was hazy, yeah. But I'm open to bids from Mason Aleworks. You tell your... Tell your bosses
I'll tell my overlords. Yeah. Don't you worry.
Yeah. Can you think of any other great values at the park?
You know, it's been so long since I actually... Because I go there with my kids, man. So, like, when I go...
You don't grab an oat soda for yourself while you're there?
I grab the Seaside Market orange juice.
Okay.
Because I like to be healthy.
Yeah.
No, I usually buy, like, one beer. And the last time I went, I got $3.94 just to have $3.94.
Okay.
So I think it's... I still love that beer. So I got that in a little souvenir cup, so I spent extra to have the take-home one that has
right.
the 394 line and the 200, the Mendoza line.
Well, it's
pretty
line sweet.
On.
Yeah, it's pretty
it's a
awesome.
Pretty cool souvenir. Yeah. So when I go, I do the opposite of what... No, I guess I do the same thing that you did at Disneyland, where I seek out, you know, like the lines to get in the most ridiculous souvenirs.
Yes.
So yes, the autographs or the pictures with princesses.
Exactly.
I just seek out beer cups. Yeah. That's my difference. But no, I'd say $3.94 is still my favorite thing to get there. And I used to love, and we were talking, I think Eno's talking about this, I really miss that they have just one-offs there, specialty one-offs, and they just basically post cores.
Yeah.
So it's like the core beer from every place. I mean, that's something that you would have seen maybe... like, for example, at Urge RB 8 years or 7 years ago when they first opened, when they had all the main taps for all the main cores from all of the main breweries.
Right. So it was a different
Calico
environment
and,
back then.
Yeah, exactly. That's not what we have now. And that definitely does not appeal to people that have gone to 160 different
Well,
breweries.
We're being surpassed by other stadiums. I know fans don't like to hear this, but
Safeco's
but when you travel around... So... Terrapin beer is owned by Miller Coors, if I'm not mistaken. But what they're doing there with Terrapin is really interesting in Atlanta at SunTrust, mm-hmm. where they have an R&D nano brewery there producing beer just for the ballpark.
That's what we wanted. We always joked about this on the Sign on San Diego forum boards. It was, we wanted to have it's now the Bumblebee Tuna one.
Yes.
So we always joked that we wanted that to be an R&D brewery.
Which would be great.
That would have been
and,
awesome.
And honestly, with the constellationification of the park, yeah. like it would make sense for Ballast to do some one-off type
and
work
like,
there.
Honestly, like Ballast does a really good job. I know it's not cool to like big beer, and I don't really have a problem aside from when it actually kicks my beer off of off
takes
of
your
shelves.
Shelf space.
Yeah. So I mean, I understand it from both sides, but
which it is.
Yeah,
it is taking your shelf space.
It 100% is. But I actually like it. I still go to the Homebrew Mart because I've frequented that place since I started brewing. And I also just kind of like it because they do their R&D things there. And that was always the best part about them. Like all the great beers that people are really into now, from them anyway, the Grapefruit Sculpin.
Right.
That was originally an R&D one down at that place. And it used to be Grapefruit Zest and it used to be amazing. Just like Sculpin used to be amazing when it was what? North Star, I believe is what it used to be called.
Yeah.
And it
and they would do
amazing.
Like their Victory at Sea.
They would do all the one-offs
there,
there
right?
before like, they did Victory at Sea Day, which is yeah. now just like 20 different flavors of the same thing, and I can't tell the difference. And candy canes, but yeah, it's one of those things where I would have wished that they would have embraced, especially with Ron Fowler. This is the funniest thing to me. It's the Sultan of Suds,
yeah,
the you know beer baron himself has no idea how
well,
to take
Bud Light's
advantage
what
of
made
that.
Him rich.
Yeah, it was Bud Light, and what was the other one? There, he has like another
Corona.
Big account. He has Corona.
And Corona was his biggest one, I thought.
I think for San Fran, he had, didn't he have the Sierra Nevada too? He has a
I
big cider
so.
One
I think so,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has some big accounts. So, I mean, granted, I guess that's giving him too
but
much
But you would
credit.
Assume he would know the business and like, well, I mean.
Well, maybe that is the business.
Maybe that is the business, yeah.
Like I'm saying, it's huge for licensing fees there. So, I mean, if you're going to have.
But San Francisco has one spot. There's one spot in the park where it's like a craft beer bar. Basically.
I can't remember what it's called. It's like public something.
Yeah, something
it's
like that.
Down the right field
where
line.
It's not Sculpin regular being served
no.
there. It's
no, they
like
have, they have like
interesting.
One, they have one off. When I went there, this was maybe 4 years, right when Isaac, my son was like a year old.
Mm-hmm.
And I went around there just to get a beer inside that little bar.
Yeah.
And they had just one of the, not a rare one, but a kind of a one-off Lost Abbey beer. Or get it in a plastic cup and take it into the ballpark.
Right.
And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's what I always kind of wished.
And it's
the
kind of
candy
like what
factories to be.
Like beers of San Diego, those stands that they
yeah.
have, like the one where they have like the it used to be exciting when they had the cask night on Friday.
I forgot about
it was
that.
It's new
Firkin
and cool
Friday
in a
thing?
Ballpark. Yeah.
yeah,
the Firkin Friday thing.
Yeah.
And now it's just different Ballast
Man, I forgot
Point.
About that.
It's basically Ballast Point there.
Yeah.
If they're still doing it, I think they are, but
I didn't notice it. I noticed it last year. I actually, that was the first time I noticed it, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
And I was there on a Thursday and I kind of shook my fist.
It blew it.
yeah.
yeah.
But no.
But like those stands,
I missed that.
They used to sell a lot of bombers. It was when bombers were more in vogue.
Yeah.
And like they had a real variety there that seemed different and cool. And I think that if people got out of the San Diego bubble and traveled to,
yeah,
I mean, Safeco.
Safeco has
even,
great selection.
Even Washington, D.C. has some. Like
doesn't
Nationals Park
Cincinnati
is not
a
cool stadium.
Too.
Yeah, a lot of them do. Milwaukee, yeah. I think I read, has like 100 beers on tap now there. And not, way outside of just Miller Coors.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's some work to be done, I think.
I don't think it's
but,
that hard
But they
either.
Love Ballast Point.
it's not just Ballast Point. It's Ballast Point, and then you have to still balance that with the people that want to buy their Budweiser or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it's so, we talk about this with the guys at our brewery too. So when we talk to people like Artifacts, they love making lagers. And so they want to do a lager festival up in San Clemente. They think it'd be awesome. And I think that'd be the best festival ever because you could stay there all day.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't deal with a bunch of drunk people. But the other reason is just everyone that's worth their, I'm just as worth anything in the beer industry can make good lagers and pilsners. We were talking about that earlier,
right?
With your favorite offering.
Oh, you mean the Ruler Bone Shaker, the New Zealand Pilsner that they have.
I was waiting
excellent.
For you to pitch
yeah.
it. Thank you. that's good. That's a
yeah,
good.
That's good. Yeah.
But I would love to see them have those as offerings to replace bigger taps, because that was one of my biggest pet peeves being a bartender. Was that, oh, do you have Budweiser? Do you have Coors? Do you have this, that, or the other?
What's like, the closest thing to Bud Light?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What's your lightest beer?
And so I just be like, we have a really good Mexican lager, and it won an award in Ensenada Beer Festival. We got a gold for Respeto. But yeah, I mean, we would be able to sell something like that
right.
there, and no one would be able to tell the difference. And yeah, that's a really easy way to get people involved while also taking advantage of 160 different breweries in the county.
Yeah.
I wish they would do that.
I wish they would do that. I don't know where they would put it. They got plenty of space they could put it, well, to be honest. But.
And the other thing, and then you get back to another problem, which is you have the, as far as the people that run the concessions, they're not going to know that difference unless you had a little prep sheet for them.
Right.
Because you're not dealing with bartenders at the park. You're dealing with people that are working.
Unless they hire one. There's no reason they couldn't hire one.
There's rules and regulations for that, I think. You could have someone shadowing them like they do at the beer festivals they do there, but you can't actually touch the taps. They have a license with them. Yeah. I don't know if you could even bypass that. I think they sign on with them.
But I mean, Delaware North could hire someone skilled in beer. They to could, be but the that,
that'd be huge.
They?
That'd be a huge cost, and I'm sure that they're getting some money from or a kickback from a large corporation like Miller Coors or Anheuser-Busch or something.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to overcome, but I think it'd be really easy to just put it in there and just be like, this tastes like Budweiser. Done.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that difficult. So, yeah, I would like to see that.
I would like that. I mean, yeah. for me, my choice is I go to Resident. Resident stand behind home plate. The Chasing Citra, they're I think, fantastic. Is the best quality of beer that you can get there, I would argue. Yeah. Resident's a peculiar really choice to be there because they're so small. I mean,
it's really funny, isn't
it? They're not even a full-on brewery. Yeah. They're like the back of the local. But their beer is so excellent.
We did a collaboration with them where we did an ESB, and I thought that was the funniest choice for a collaboration ever. It's you do an ESB, really?
Was it great? It was great, right?
I mean, they're great.
They are great,
Yeah, we did a beer dinner with them at Urge. So
I mean, they don't even can. Good. They just fill crowlers and sell it as canned.
I love it,
but it's like, they're so small, and it's weird to see them at Petco Park. And sometimes that makes me wonder about the economics of how they got there and what they're doing and if they're making money. I have no idea. I'd love to find out, but...
I don't know the price between all the different, like having the craft beers... stands and having something franchised kind of like the Pizza Port ones, which are a little bit more permanent. And definitely I don't want to know what the Ballast Point bill is or the Cutwater. God, that just
but I think a lot
cringe.
Of people
so
think
much money.
Like well, Resident's charging me $13.75 for this beer, so they're making a lot of money on this. And like Delaware North and the Padres are making a lot of money on this. Yeah. Resident's probably selling it for cost just to get their logo.
They're probably getting in there just to be in there. Yeah. And so people go out downtown and they see Resident or probably see
and you
local
can say like, oh, it's just marketing, but Resident's not that big. So they're devoting like a lot of production to this.
That's
low
gotta be,
margin.
That's gotta be like a really good, I don't know what their reasoning would be behind it. That's a pretty damn big risk.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool. But
like Iron,
again,
I mean,
it doesn't make much business sense for me, but I'd love to.
I've always
that.
Wondered this about Iron Fist. Like, they're kind of a... I know they advertise on Padres podcasts.
They're on the
stuff.
Ribbon board.
I know they're at Target.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
They're literally on the ribbon boards at Petco Park.
Oh, yeah. Is that new this year?
I think that was last year when I noticed it.
But
That's
I think
crazy.
They had this big marketing push. And,
yeah.
And they were advertising on podcasts. And, you know, they had Caesar working for them back then.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a Hail Mary. I thought they were throwing a Hail Mary. Like, this...
I think they've got decent funding behind them.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they open up this new Barrio Logan place, and it's like, I don't know. Like, would I throw all this money into the Padres account? Like, is that your best bet? Maybe it is. I don't know. It gets your beer in front of a lot of people.
I'll be honest. When I was going to buy
there's never a line.
Annie's Mac and Cheese from Target, the $5 for $5, I was really surprised to see them just kind of on the end there.
Bombers there, right? Or is it the six-pack?
No, I think it was... I don't know if it was a full six-pack or they had individual bottles. I think it was just for display purposes, they had individual bottles. But yeah, it was definitely the Bombers. They might have sold them in the back. I don't buy beer at Target. So. I'm there for diaper runs and mac and cheese.
Mr. Snob over here. Too cool to buy beer at Target.
Hey, man. I got all those Lucadia and La Costa moms looking at me weird when I walk out with two kids and a shopping cart full of beer. That's more what it is.
Yeah.
They don't judge me when I go into other places.
I'm going to find out about the economics of this. I'm going to get all the details. Someone will talk to me.
I would like to ask people, like obviously that I work with, but I'm kind of scared to find out the answers because I'm sure it's really going
to
scare me.
I've talked to a guy that owns Rymal's, lives in Elevenhain, and I see him at like social functions sometimes. I asked him, are you happy that you're there? And he said it was one of the worst investments he's ever made because they stuck him in a terrible location. I mean, they didn't stick him. He agreed to do it or whatever. But
well, it's good. Here's the thing. It sucks for him because he wants to get in there, and it's an only a win for the Padres because they get to say, oh, look at this local place we got.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where they stuck him.
Right.
Like, people will seek him out. They get some sort of, you know, publicity from it. And they get to sell something better than, like, a Fry or Frank.
So, yeah. But, I mean, like, I complain about North County marketing a lot. And sometimes it just sounds like complaining. But I talked to this guy, and he's like, well... Yeah. It's weird because I have this restaurant in Cardiff, and it's a team that doesn't market to anyone here. And it would be more impactful if I was in downtown or North Park.
So that's the other thing.
This isn't helping.
When you bring up resident, it makes sense to
me. Right, because it's right there.
And when you walk out the ballpark, you could almost not fall into it, but you're within driving distance.
Yeah.
Like petty, short
you're within,
walking
certainly
distance.
Within pedicab.
Exactly. And I mean, it makes sense for certain things. Like, there's an OB location for Pizza Port, and there's obviously, it made sense for Mission. It makes sense for Ballast Point.
Iron Fist, Barrio Logan, makes sense.
Makes sense. But, for example, I have no idea why Seaside Market is there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, luckily, Cardiff Crack will sell itself, but I just don't get it, because the Padres do not have a presence in North County.
You know what the presence was? It was Mike D. Because Mike D hung out in Cardiff all the time from Rancho Santa Fe. And he went to Seaside Market and he went to Rymal's.
Well, as you should, because it's amazing.
Right. Well, they should have brought East Coast Pizza in instead of Rymal's. But
that's a good point. But I mean, it's super funny that you say that too, because now we have a house we're in the process of purchasing in Vista, I actually did the whole tune in to 97.3 and 94.9 to see if I can hear it from my house type thing. So my old place in Oceanside, when you crested the last hill, you would lose connection to 94.9. 1090 I could hear all the way up the 15 to Storm Games. It would just cut out briefly and then be right back on. And I could hear it most of my drive back up to Santa Cruz when I was going to school there. It is crazy, though. Going back and forth from work, I never had a problem listening to 1090 ever.
Yeah.
Or 94.9, because occasionally I listen to the radio for music, although not really to 94.9. But going up the hill... through San Alijo Hills.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going from San Marcos back into San Alijo Hills, it is a complete non-fat. You can't hear it at all. It's just static all the way up.
Right.
So, talk about not marketing.
Well,
I mean, you can't even hear the Padres if you live on that back side.
This is getting
of the hill.
Into the North County nuts and bolts, but I wasn't deep in Encinitas on Monday or whatever when I took that video of no reception. I was at Westlake and Encinitas Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, not...
It drops out all the time.
I'm right by the freeway. I'm within half a mile, mile of the freeway. The other place that I know drops out is near your work at Mason Ale Works on 78
all
between...
The time.
Basically by Wild Barrel on 78.
I cannot listen to it.
It drops out completely on 78.
So I make a lot of trips between all of our locations, and also just to check in on accounts and stuff that. But the thing that really sucks is it's complete non-fat. You can't hear it at all between... basically the 15 and right about not quite as far as Sycamore, but I guess Rancho Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Like right around there. You can't hear it all on the 78 in that stretch. I mean, just it's in and out or just pure static.
Well, and a lot of people just turn it off. I'll stick with it because I want to hear, I'll stick through some things. I will say I was at a stoplight at Westlake and Encinitas Boulevard, and you move a little bit and it comes back and then it goes out and I'll tough it out generally. But a lot of people won't. They'll change the station immediately.
I'm one of those people. If the reception's bad, it doesn't matter if I'm enjoying what it is, I'll just turn it off.
Yeah.
If I have a podcast that's not buffering quick enough,
it
turns off. So I mean, I'm obviously I don't have a lot of patience for that, but I mean, it is just kind of unlistenable. North County has no presence.
It still was so astonishing to me. The team sat down and was like, well, hey, we really want to get younger, and young kids listen to FM radio these days. and then they were like, well, if we do that, we're going to cut off the wealthiest, huge swath of this county and any chance of expanding our interest beyond the county.
You've basically just encouraged them to listen to the Angels.
Right, who have a giant station that they own.
And they're on every cable channel, too, because they're not blocked out.
Right.
Because I have cable now. And I get
you know the Angels televised every single spring training game? They're the only team in baseball that televised every single spring training game.
I knew they televised a lot because I watched a lot of them.
Yeah. Every game on radio, every game on TV.
Interesting.
They were by far the team that provided the most exposure to their product.
What's really funny about that, too, is you would never know that because Mike Trout is still not the single greatest thing in baseball as marketed by everything in baseball.
Right.
Or even the Angels.
So but you know where they like the Angels? In Temecula and Lake Elsinore yep. and like Menifee.
Well, I mean, like Lake Elsinore makes sense. That used to be their minor league team.
Right.
So, I mean.
It does. And it's just over the
people
mountain.
People still wear their stuff all the time there. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Angels are huge there. And that should be Padres territory. And they can't pull the games and they, you know. It's just weird to me that they were like, you know. Especially this year. Especially right now. Like, they announced the new radio station. Yeah. You saw the new lineup.
Oh, and God, yeah.
Can you imagine...
Forgot about that.
Wayne Partello, who's told people, like, you know, we wanted to get younger. And people are like, oh, well, that makes sense, right? And then you get handed this FM lineup with Dan Cilio and Chris Ello.
And like, or even Klein even to before. Klein had that skinny tie, so he must have appealed to a...
I can see the logic, you know?
Yeah.
If Klein hadn't screwed up, like, I at least could understand the logic behind the idea.
He's younger and more appealing than the other two options.
Sure, yeah. There's a chance something like that.
And by the way, I just want to say, let's not lump Ello into the same group as someone, a pile of human garbage.
No, I'm not trying to say Ello's garbage, but he's not the guy the 17-year-olds are looking to listen to.
I totally get what you're saying. I'm just like... I hear that together. Yeah. Like, let's make it clear.
Let me make it clear. Chris Ello is not human garbage.
He's not human garbage. He's not a tire fire. No. God.
He's not hateable. He's not even unlikable.
I think you kind of nailed it on the head, though, when you said that they're getting a huge pass on this. Basically, they're going to let their station still be spearheaded by a total pile of garbage.
Way worse than Kevin Klein. Yeah. Did or would do.
Kevin Klein is insensitive. He's a moron.
But
Cilio is like a repeated racist.
Yeah.
And just like, he's the worst.
I've got a little libertarian streak in me and like free speech wise, you know.
Yeah.
He's a comedian, right? And he told a joke that didn't work. And it was offensive. I'll be the first to say it was offensive. I don't have anyone that's jumped off the bridge or has really killed himself, but. I'm sensitive to it, right? And I understand why people are upset about it. But in the end...
At least think it through. You had multiple chances to not post
and
that.
The follow-up, everyone is, you know, I agree, and everyone has said is the worst part of it.
Yeah.
And he's a dummy. He's a total dummy.
Yeah.
But Cilio, on a daily basis, spouts awful stuff. Like...
I mean, like,
if you ever sit down and listen to him, like, I'll turn it on just for a second. Like, I'll have the game on the night before. I went to the grocery store, so the game's on, right? And I get in the car in the morning or going to basketball. Like,
is this how listening to Cilio so you don't have to happen?
Sometimes it happens. Yeah, that's how it happens.
Okay. Now this makes a little bit more sense.
I'm not trying to listen to Cilio.
I know.
I don't hate myself.
You're doing us all a service. I'm listening to the interviews. I get you.
he's just, every time something pops up, every time I hear him for a minute, it's something equally as bad as what Kevin Klein said. And nobody talks about it because no one listens to it.
Yeah.
But
as evidenced by his social media presence and his following on the radio.
He's a host that the team literally had to write and issue a press release that said we won't be providing players onto his show.
And then they gave themselves a pat on the back when they said we resolved everything. And that guy's still there.
The day after they sent Jesse Agler onto his show.
I know. It's just so bad.
I kind of predicted how the whole thing would go, and I think we're close to it. I haven't seen how much back batting Ron Fowler's gotten, but it was always going to be they were going to fire Klein, they were going to reconfigure it, and then they were going to say, hey, we fixed everything. Like, I saw Ron Fowler's quote today. Ron Fowler basically said, you know, we didn't like the content, and now we're a lot happier with where we're at.
It is basically the mission accomplished banner.
Yeah. And
then furled them.
Meanwhile, they promoted Cilio, into Morning Drive, which is better, so.
It means more presence.
So, I mean, on the bright side, I can't get the station here, so it's fine. But...
Yeah, that's actually the part I was getting at. So, right when you, at the new place we're buying, when you hit the last turn, blacks out.
Nice. Cilio-free zone.
Yeah, and I also noticed that that MLB's game day audio doesn't do between-inning ads anymore.
Yeah.
Or it's not as prevalent as it used to be. It used to be you could... That was like my favorite part. You'd listen to a Blue Jays
localized
broadcast.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like local ads are the best. Didn't understand a lick of it if it was the Blue Jays broadcast, but you know. But this is kind of nice in that I've listened to it on Game Day Audio, and they don't have as many of them, so yeah. I don't have to hear 97.3 The Machine over and over and over. So
how degrading for Ted Leitner every time he has to say
anybody.
Yeah.
Oh God, piece of his soul is just dying.
Yeah. Well, at least now they'll get to say 97.3 The Fan and really
the
be
fan. Yeah, it's
really
a little bit better.
Saving face.
Oh God, it's just bad.
It's bad.
It's just bad. Everything's bad.
The other topic I had, because Marver's not here, Marver's really been gotten beaten up on Twitter because he dared to say that Fernando Tatis Jr., who of course is our savior, our Lord and Savior for the future, that there is a chance...
Oh, sorry. When you said savior, I thought you were talking about Chase Headley. Okay, carry on.
That's mean. That's cruel.
I love Chase Headley.
We all love Chase Headley.
Not all of us.
He's not going to get his... He's not going to be in the Padres Hall of Fame, is he?
No, he's not. And that's going to kill me.
Adrian's not either, probably, right?
No, neither of them.
Yeah.
The only shoe-in is Peavy, right? Shoe-in. That's
yeah.
a definite shoe-in.
Yeah, he's a shoe-in.
He didn't leave...
Bill Center likes him. That's the biggest...
That's a good point.
That's the biggest criteria.
He didn't leave and throw a giant fit, although I would argue... The Go Cubs Go thing didn't help.
Yeah, that was before.
That was
before
quickly forgotten
traded, right?
Before he got. Yeah,
yeah, we forgave him.
He didn't have the, was it the buying my wife purses thing that Adrian did?
Yeah,
yeah. So I'd say he wasn't as clueless when he left, but yeah, it's. I think he's the only shoo-in, which is really sad.
This is a brief aside, but yeah. They don't have that many players left that they can induct, right?
No, they
that
really
you would
don't.
Think are worthy.
There's always Will Venable.
I'm in favor of Padre for Life, Will Venable, but they lost him to the Cubs, too.
Yeah, I know. They're gonna lose
cruel him. Betrayal. But I was looking at the top 100 Bill Center list, and
yeah.
it gets ugly quick. Like, I mean, are they going to induct Ed Whitson, you know? Like,
it got really bad quick, yeah. I mean, like, it's just...
Nevin. What about Nevin?
I don't know.
Long time best
you
player.
Klesko,
I mean,
right?
He was best player on the team for 5 years,
he and
right?
Klesko, you got to have both of them, right?
I'm not opposed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, at this point, we're really just choosing the...
I've always said the Hall of Fame should be fan favorite types.
Yeah.
Like not Eric Owen, but...
He wasn't here long enough anyway.
I know this is unpopular, but I have good feelings about Brian Lawrence, former opening day starter. I would
Actually,
not be opposed to Brian Lawrence getting inducted.
I'm kind of with you on that.
I mean, it's not like they're retiring the number. Like,
yeah.
They're just hanging hanging a thing in the Hall of Fame presented by Sony.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, I mean, it's really just a slideshow to showcase the history there. That's one of the reasons, like, with the regular Hall of Fame, I mean, it's a complete tangent, but the steroids thing, like, I'm history major, I just like the history of it.
Yeah.
So I just want them to present the full history of it. So it's the same thing with the Padres. It's like, they have a terrible history. I root for the two worst teams, Padres and the Rays, and the Padres are garbage, and they have been garbage for, you know, decades and decades and decades. And I've been privileged enough to be, as we discussed last time, born during the golden age. And it's still garbage.
Yeah.
It's still garbage that we're looking at. And so, yeah, Brian Lawrence, he's still our garbage. And that's why I think it's funny. People always joke, why do you say Kevin Brown should be in the Padres Hall of Fame? It's because he's awesome. And
yes.
Like that's a story worth telling. And that's really all I'm there for, is I just want the story worth telling.
That's the point of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And
they celebrate
98 all the time, too. And he was the best player, and not just on that team, but any team that ever played.
He's
like for
the
any
best.
Season.
He's had the best season
yeah.
ever. And we
so
talked
you,
about this last time we were
yeah,
on the
yeah,
podcast,
so,
but
so just,
the best season in Padres history.
Yeah.
Period.
So I mean, like, yeah. So that's the thing, though. I just want the story. So if Brian Lawrence, for example, Steve Finley is like beloved in San Diego,
yeah,
and he was just like a non-factor in that year, but like his stories were telling because he made one unbelievable catch that made all of those highlight
right.
films.
And
so
he had a game-winning grand slam.
Yeah, and so totally fine with it. Now, like, these might be small little footnotes to it, but they're still worth telling.
Well, I think that's the history that I've always said the team doesn't really embrace.
No.
Like, Bill Center sucks. First, I'm pretty clear that Bill Center sucks in general. But
right.
He doesn't understand that, like, there are stories like that
yeah.
appeal to fans that have stuck by the team for decades.
It's why I'll always argue this is why the... Bring back the Brown thing is such a big deal. It's just like it's a story of when people stuck with a absolutely terrible expansion team for so long.
Right.
And the reason they went to blue was because of an owner that wanted something a certain way. And that's why people don't identify with it. It
yeah.
It might
not
even look
not
better
to mention
or
an
worse.
Owner that
but,
we all hate.
Yeah, exactly.
We should add. But
I mean, that's the funny thing about this is that it just needs to be a good story. And I feel like certain people, Bill Center, have chosen the wrong people that the fans are just like, what are you talking about? This makes no sense.
Right.
So he's chosen someone that was like a sweetheart interview or something like that, that he could get
that's
a really
all he
good
cared
interview
about.
Out of.
Yeah.
Or, you know, cozy up to. And while there's some sort of story to be told there, it definitely doesn't interest me.
No.
So like, I'm not, you're not going to send, you know, a bunch of reporters through the turnstiles at the Hall of Fame. That's not the whole point of it.
Right.
So I just don't get it.
I mean, I joked about Eric Owens, but I actually wouldn't be opposed if they inducted Eric Owens into
just,
the
just put his dirty
because
shirt
it's
up
a
there.
It's a story that people like. Like yeah. It's either that or don't.
He stole home. He played.
I don't know. Mark Davis won a Cy Young. Like yeah. That's right in the core of when I started liking baseball in 1989. Yeah. So like, why not induct him?
I will say this though. Talking about this, I do feel hypocritical saying that after what we said earlier about the baseball hall of fame.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean though. It's like we're basically celebrating people for playing it the right way, or you know, like diving headfirst into home or stealing home or doing all these things when they really weren't that good. But I. Yeah, it's definitely hypocritical.
It's
just put it that way.
But it's not necessarily to celebrate the best player.
No, exactly.
It's to celebrate the best stories.
And that, yeah, that's true. And like I said,
Norfia,
I just like the story.
Obviously, I mean, it was kind of a joke, the whole Norf thing.
If they had a display in the Potter's Hall of Fame of all the dives he took to miss baseballs,
yeah.
I am in favor. Just like an illustrated view of it where you walked around.
Right, on a Sony LCD television in the Hall of Fame presented by Sony, it would be fine. I would love that.
All right.
But that, like, that's the kind of thing that would appeal. Or fine, have rotating exhibits or something.
Yeah.
But I think, I can't tell you how underwhelmed I was the first time I walked through the Potter's Hall of Fame. And maybe it's because I'm so exposed to all of the material already that it's not new to me. But
that's fair, yeah.
It looks, I mean, it's pretty, but it's not, it feels dead, I guess. Like, there's
no
emotion.
It was very sterile when
I
walked in there. Like,
yeah.
You walk in and you can kind of get a gist of everything that I could have from my kid's little, like, Padres for Babies book.
Right, yeah.
Which is not
very good.
Well.
It's not very good.
It's not very good.
A lot of blue.
I felt that was a lot of the same information. So, I don't know. I thought there were certain things. Like, for example, I really love the A. L. Smith Tony Gwynn exhibit.
Incredibly great. It's way better than the Padres Hall of Fame.
I'm kind of wondering, why didn't the Padres get their hands on any of that stuff?
It's a fair question, honestly.
Yeah. I just don't get it. You celebrate this player. I mean, maybe they just wanted it exposed there because they worked more closely with them, which, again, is insane. But
yeah.
I just feel like that's a great example of history being displayed, whereas the Padres have taken it and they branded it like they do everything. They branded everything and they got their money for it, and then they put the most docile, sterile display they could have.
Right. I made fun of the Sony stuff, but you can have it be branded and still not be lifeless, I think. And I don't know. Players like that weren't necessarily the best but are well remembered, like Will Venable.
Will Venable.
Right.
First ballot.
Yeah.
Chase Headley should have been inducted this year while playing.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that.
But you know, someday...
Before he leaves, they should definitely get
someday, if they had an exhibit for Chase Headley's, you know, his one half year of greatness...
2 months.
I should say of offensive greatness.
Yeah.
If they had a rotating exhibit for that, so that 10 years from now people can remember that, I think that's the kind of thing people would be interested in.
Yeah. I'm okay with that.
If you're going to talk about 1998, then have something on... At the time, like, remember John Flaherty? Remember how he had like a 35-game hitting streak?
There's so many weird footnotes in that season that I feel like you could just fill the entire museum with that.
Oh, yeah.
The entire thing with just these weird things, like, yeah, that like a hit streak or just Kevin Brown doing Kevin Brown things or weird
Sterling
acquisitions
Hitchcock.
Or Sterling
like
Hitchcock
owning the NL. What, CS or DS? Whichever
CS.
One. Both. I think he owned both of them. But
yeah. Wasn't he the...
He was the MVP for the
CS
I think. So there's just like
or just,
exhibits
you know
like that.
Just a giant display on Quilvio Varas because I loved him growing up.
Right.
Just because he played second base. But just for him.
Yeah. And Chris Gomez, former La Costa resident. Almost your neighbor.
Right.
Almost lived next to your house right now.
That's right. I forgot about Chris Gomez.
Yeah.
Man.
There's like a lot of stuff, but that's what people, that makes me feel good when I see an exhibit like that. And I agree. It would be nice to see. Instead, they have a giant picture of Mike D hiring AJ Preller that's four times larger than Mark Davis, a Cy Young winner's picture, which they stuck down on the floor, like literally like 2 inches above the floor.
2 inches above the floor, I know. Yeah, I pointed at that and said, he was very good at baseball, son.
Yeah.
This is a general manager.
Mark Davis,
where you watch the game, really, as a general
really encompassed everything about Padres baseball, though. Yeah. In where the team tried to cheapen his market value, drive it down, and then demonized him afterwards after he left.
But speaking of that, though, you get back to Chris Gomez and AJ Preller. You're saying something about Tatis and Marver.
I will say, Marver, I think
I don't think
he's trying to say he's going to be a bust. And that's the way it gets taken sometimes on Padres Twitter.
He had a bunch of percentages and odds, and that's where I zoned out. Because I don't follow.
Marver has these like proprietary systems he's created for fantasy baseball and stuff.
He showed me a bunch of them. Really interesting. I'm just saying, like, I don't know what he's talking about.
The only results I've ever seen is when Max Fried was traded, and Marver relied on his calculations and his proprietary system to say that Fried was not dominating at any level he was at, and because of that, he almost likely was going to either be a bust or be a bottom of the rotation non-impact player, which, other than Keith Law, I think most people probably agree with today.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to say his system is bunk, I don't know. It's not like he lets me play with it or anything, or that I would even understand how to do it.
Yeah.
But basically what Marver has said is that there are a range of possible distributions for how someone's career will play out, right? It's kind of like what Cato is for Fangraphs, right?
Yeah.
And so I think what he said is, given 100 at-bats at AA, regardless of his age, I guess, or even comparing similar players at that level.
I think he argued both points, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's hard for me to sometimes follow what he's getting at.
Too many people on Twitter.
If only there were a long form audio format that he could come on and explain this.
Like,
but
like a podcast.
Yeah. basically what he said is there's a chance he might not work out. Or that he may not be a Manny Machado type player, which I think is what a lot of, and AC Stokes this also by talking about Carlos Correa on Sunday, but there's a lot of fans, I think, that
Carlos Correa was like an extra knife in the heart, though. I mean, because of all the talk that happened before the draft, the Padres would get him.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a deliberate dig, and that's, again, yet one of a million reasons why I hate AC.
Right, but you're also assuming that AC followed the Padres at all before the last 2 months.
I'm assuming that AC follows the Padres now. Anyway, continue.
God, AC's a dickhead.
just a little.
And so do you get the feeling a lot of fans will be disappointed if Tatis is, and I said this on Twitter, like, what if he's Addison Russell, an okay shortstop on a good team?
I think they should
not
be
a star.
I think they should be thrilled at that out. Like, honestly, that outcome would be amazing to me.
Do you think fans in general would be happy with that? Or would they demonize him like they did Brian Giles?
Well, here's the thing. Like, I would be amazed by that because, A, they got him for nothing. They got him for James Shields' bad contract.
Yeah.
They got him for that, and that's about it. So they didn't give up much. It's not like they dedicated... Well, technically, I guess you could argue they dedicated a lot of money because they threw a contract at it to get him. But that was dead money anyway. So I don't really consider it that way. It's not like if you went in the international draft and threw a bunch of money at one particular player with the intention that he's going to be good.
Yeah.
This was like kind of a lottery ticket at that point because you already spent the money.
I know we forgot about him, but Eric Johnson was a top 100 prospect also the preseason before they traded for him. So Eric Johnson was actually the player they were trying to get, but...
That's a good point.
So when you talk about how great the trade was, Eric Johnson was literally the main piece of it. Tatis was an afterthought.
I mean, I know we talked about this before, but I'm not sure he was the afterthought or more of just like, this is a fun lottery ticket where like we think that he could be something, but it's so far away, who knows? But like, you're right. There's like a lot more written, a lot more known, and not just from reporters or scout or, people that write on websites. This is like probably scouts too.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of people were really sure about Tatis, and maybe Preller was better about this. I think that's like extreme conjecture at this point. I think you're just giving him a lot more credit than is due.
Well, he could have signed him.
Yeah, and that's what I mean.
It wasn't expensive.
Like, yeah, so to me, that's just kind of, that's kind of grasping.
But I'm also on the side of saying he did trade for him.
Yeah.
And so he deserves saw whatever credit exactly. for that.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm not totally discrediting what he did, but at the same time, I think this idea that he basically sought this guy out knowing he was going to be a superstar is ridiculous and kind of what's fueling these expectations as well.
Yeah.
And I also think we're basing this off of one season of breakout status. And granted, he did a lot.
He was great. But there's no doubting it.
But. No. But I mean, it's... I've seen both arguments. So Marver's saying this amount of at-bats at this level, not promising. I mean, I'm kind of... You know, this is Cliff Notes version.
That is basically what he said, yeah. though.
So I get that argument because it doesn't look good.
The common response is...
The common response
well,
is...
Well, he's 19.
Well, and the other thing is he was put up for a playoff push and he skipped a level. And I don't know if we could really read a lot into like skipping from low A all the way to double A is like such a minor skip. Like
right.
you're not missing a lot in high A. I think that there's a lot to learn in high A, especially when it comes to the extreme ballparks. You kind of learn what they can do there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just competition level, but just kind of how they handle the parks. Anyway, that's a completely different argument. But I understand that aspect too. He's really young, playing at a really high level, and maybe give him more than like 100 at-bats. I just really don't feel comfortable saying he was going to be a superstar to begin with. I felt like he got everyone's expectations up, and I feel like he's eventually going to move to third base because he's just a bigger person who doesn't really play the position extraordinarily well to begin with. He gets
right.
by. But the big thing is that I would just be thrilled if he was adequate. And the Padres have almost planned their whole system around, or it looks that way from the outside eye, that's how they planned it. And that's the problem.
For him to be a superstar.
For him to be a superstar.
Right, because...
That's an issue to me.
Because well,
you can't
when you
do
look
that with
at,
anybody.
I mean, they constantly have said that they are the Astros and the Cubs, right? They're
yeah.
following. They're not following the Cubs blueprint. That's yeah. that's false. But you could argue the Royals or the, mm-hmm. I guess, the Astros. But they've got superstars.
So you've got to
dig in.
Too. The Royals had, I mean, it's a great example because we have Hosmer on the team currently. But that was one of the most historic farm systems ever as far as how many they graduated up.
Right.
It also took 8 years to get all those pieces together.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
and a lot of
top 100s
failed
at the time.
You know, over
oh,
there.
Yeah. Or, like, Myers was traded away.
Right.
To get, like, basically their core pieces for, like, a stabilizing piece in the rotation and, like, their absolute unbeatable closer. Or I guess, late inning guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the most ridiculous part about this to me is, like, to assume that all this depth means something when there's really not a clear standout. I think this is the same problem you saw with Hoyer, frankly. And that was different because that was any sort of enthusiasm you have for the farm system was curbed by the fact they couldn't spend. Now they spend a lot and there's no clear standout yet.
Right.
It's still really, really young.
Well, the hope,
it's like young systems.
And the hope is, you know what, Urias and Tatis are
yeah.
the standouts? And they might be.
They might. Yeah, I'm not totally...
I'm
shrugging that off.
Not
but.
Unconfident about Urias, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I think he could be a standout of
some
kind.
I think he'd be decent and he'd provide a particular skill set. I personally, when I watched him, I didn't think he was all that great at defense, but I've been told that's wrong. So I'm going to trust people that know more than I do. But he could sure as hell hit the ball.
Yeah.
He hit the ball everywhere. Not with a lot of power, but he got on base and he hit the ball well and you could not get a ball past him. So... Yeah, it's encouraging.
Yeah.
So that's a really good skill set to have on a team that has a bunch of power. You have Hosmer and you have Myers and Renfro. And, I mean, like, Renfro isn't exactly scaring me. Well, he's scaring
me
from a Padres fan standpoint.
Even if he somehow stuck around, like, he's
yeah.
not a superstar. Like,
no.
he's not
these are accessory
Jose Altuve. Like, not
yeah.
he's not...
Well, and that's the other thing, is hearing them compared to all these other teams... I mean, the reason Addison Russell would be a good comp to me is because Addison Russell's a good shortstop. Garbage human, good shortstop.
Yes.
But they also can throw Baez in there in a pinch, and they have basically the same player.
Right.
And that's the difference, is that they have that, and then their superstars are guys like Bryant and Rizzo, and they have amazing starting pitching and everything
right.
else. So that's the big problem here is the Padres don't have that. And I don't see it on the near horizon here. And that's the major issue. You have to really glance down the road to like kind of see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And like, so, Gore is so far away.
He is really far, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's like 2-3 years, like if you're like being very optimistic.
I mean, they're still stretching his arm out at this point.
Yeah, that's like, what he's I'm not saying. A full I mean, like, that's like me, like, pie in the sky, super optimistic, and like, I'd say like 3 years is probably pushing it.
Right.
So.
Well, and so I think Marver, you know, maybe he could have waited a month for another 100 at bats or so. Well,
these are like, this is like AC's article about how they're talking about extending Galvis, or they should.
Yeah. Was Same it an thing. Awful article or?
Oh, I mean, like, anytime you're talking AC, about 12 but, games, trying to extend a guy for the next year because he's shown so much.
Well, he's yeah, OPSing like 1,000. Yeah. I mean,
it's going to continue. History's on his side.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at is that it's kind of the same thing. It's 100 at-bats, obviously, or plate appearances, whatever, is obviously more than what Galvis has shown thus far.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have a history of this. So I feel like it's a little bit harder to read the tea leaves on that, but... Yeah, I think there's a little bit to it, and I think people's expectations would be dashed if he's anything other than a superstar. And that sucks.
It sucks for
that's
him.
What happened with Headley, too.
Yeah, for sure. And that's so what that's happens when you call people a savior.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's the same.
And I think I saw, boat. Like, Zach Monk Dustin today said, you know, I think it's realistic to expect him to be 3-5 war. So, let's say I'm conservative and he's a 3-war player. That's a good player. That's Will Myers at his best, basically.
That was Everett Cabrera in his All-Star year.
Yeah. It's not bad, but I don't think that's... If you're counting on him to anchor your team later, problem. He's not an anchor then. That's a useful, good player, and that's nothing to be upset about, especially given the Padres' history of developing players, let alone shortstops.
Yeah.
That's better than Khalil Greene ever was, by a little bit, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that's what I worry about. And it comes off as negative sometimes, but I'm like literally, like professionally, like I do things and I'm supposed to look at the worst case, what could happen. Like that's a lot of what attorneys do as well. Like they'll look at something and they'll say, what's the worst possible outcome for this and how can we mitigate it with what we're doing?
Risk assessment.
Right. Yeah. And so you look at Tatis and you say, it's not that I'm rooting for him to be bad, but you should have a backup plan, right? If you're investing all of this and he's the cornerstone of your plan,
the
you
backup
need a
is
backup Calvus,
plan. Extended for 2 years, maybe
oh,
three.
God, I want to punch. I want to punch AC right in the stomach. You know the thing with Galvis is
I actually really like Galvis.
I love him. He's great.
I love Galvis.
But the thing is, if you're Freddie Galvis and you're 28 years old, and let's say he has a career year, let's say he somehow OPS is 800, 850 or something and plays the shortstop that he's been playing.
Trade him.
I mean, yeah, trade him, but you think he's going to sign a 2-year extension here? I mean, if he OPS is 850 and he's 28 and he hits the free agent market.
Well, he could do the same thing that Cozart did.
Which is.
Like basically sign 3 years and then go to.
Yeah,
go
he could
to
do that.
Go to a
yeah.
contender.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Is like again, why would he sign here?
But the thing with Cozart is he was 34.
Oh
and
yeah,
he's still
I mean,
got
he's
three
got
years.
Age. He's got like, he's got age on his
Freddie
side.
Freddie Galvis though. Isn't signing a 2-year contract with a club option, right?
No.
Assuming he has that good of a year, the only way you're going to sign him on an extension is if he has a bad year again.
I also think that we're, I mean, this is how I would have thought maybe before last offseason, but maybe it's more realistic now. I mean, maybe it's more realistic
what,
now.
2019?
No, like, you know, like based upon how free agent signings went this past offseason.
Oh,
maybe,
that the market could depress his value.
Maybe,
but...
maybe it will. I mean, like, I'm done trying to predict what's going to happen there. The thing is, why would you want to?
Right.
I mean, like, I don't think this is, I mean, this is the same argument that people made for Hosmer having, like, a career renaissance in his year 28 season. It's all up. It's not going to happen. Like, and if it does, it's like a huge, it's a huge rule breaking thing that happens. So I wouldn't expect it. I would definitely not bank on it because the Padres made so many financial guarantees with things that are just like the most optimistic outcome in recent years that I'm just done with it. I mean, I think that's more my problem with guys like Hosmer, even like the idea of signing someone like Galvis. Galvis could continue to do this for 2-3 years. I don't want to see them bet on it anymore because they have so much money tied up into these amazing outcomes that,
right.
like, when they actually do get good, and let's say Tatis is an accessory piece, they'll have no more money to spend on accessory pieces.
Right.
Or, like, that one final push guy. So that was the thing about the Astros. The Astros only extended Altuve after they had secured guys like Verlander, who was a huge gamble. And then they got Cole for, like, nothing, considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, look at what they're doing with him now. So, I mean, these are all guys on bargain deals, and they've rewarded them accordingly as time has gone on, and they still have money to spare and money to burn because the Astros have a ton of money in that market.
Right. Like, Dallas Keuchel's a Cy Young winner. What is
that?
He's pre-arbitration still, or did they extend him?
No. He has an affordable contract. I can't remember the details of his contract, though.
He's pre-arbitration, right? Yeah, 1 year, $13 million. That's off of...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's still like reasonable. I don't think he signed anything. He wasn't one of those guys that signed like a...
extension.
Yeah.
He's a free agent after this year, so he's in ARB3 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, but that's the whole thing is like you're betting on these guys to get you through, and then when Keuchel leaves, you just secured Cole.
Right.
You've basically replaced him with the same guy.
Right.
That's ridiculous to me. So that's the problem here is the Padres don't have that opportunity. They basically put all their eggs in the Tatis must be a superstar basket.
Yeah, he must be Manny Machado.
Yeah, and like you're not. And here's the thing,
and that's not impossible. No, we should say, but it's also not likely.
He could be amazing. He could be amazing. And I'm not saying that 100 plate appearances at Double A disproves this, but it's a lot harder to make any, like you said, risk assessment. You can't really assess that risk while you have guys like potentially Galvis, Hosmer, Myers, Richard, and all these other, and not that Richard's an unmovable contract, but you can't do that when you have a whole bunch of them stacked up.
Hand.
Yeah. I mean, and Hand is actually on a decent contract.
Good contract, but it adds up. Like you got enough $7 to $10 million.
And that's
guys,
a lot of volatility too.
Right.
I mean, not everyone is Hosmer who signs at, what is he, like 28?
Mm-hmm.
Just about 28, whatever it is. I mean, not everyone's like that. And Galvis is not a Hosmer, so locking him up makes no sense to me.
Right.
I mean, he adds security.
I don't think I should even trade him, though. I would keep him.
I just let him play through.
I'd give him a qualifying offer.
Wasn't qualifying 17 now?
You think he's
going
to take it?
No, he'll take the multi-year security, I'd assume.
I think so, but...
But here's the thing. I
don't think that's a disaster if he takes it.
No, I don't either.
For 1 year in 2019, I don't think that's bad.
Well, again, they think they're going to be competitive in 2020. They say 2019, but let's be honest.
Well, Ron Fowler promised 500 this year.
Oh, yeah. Ron Fowler promises a lot of things.
He does. Writes a lot of checks his body can't cash. You know?
Under promises and over delivers, right?
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
Sure. He's been real good at that. But yeah, so I don't have a problem with Galvis. Galvis is fine. I like I said, I kind of like whispered it on Twitter, but I actually like watching a good shortstop play.
Yeah,
I hate watching bad defense.
I pretty openly said I didn't like the process of acquiring him, but now that he's here, like, he's great. He's the best thing to watch, honestly.
Seriously.
On the field, at least. Yeah.
I mean, he makes like potentially. I mean, he's made some like questionable runs at balls and like some bad hops or some bad routes, but he still makes them.
But he's
that's
hitting. I mean,
he's hitting too.
He's hitting. That I mean, that's the big thing.
Well, the other thing, he is really good at on defense.
Because honestly, they could call Javi Guerra up. And he'd probably wow us on a lot of plays in the field. He would really make us sad at the plate. He'd really be Austin Hedges at the plate.
He's made me sadder than sad at the plate.
He's made me so sad at Lake Elsinore. But
I mean, like, if anyone thinks that Austin Hedges is bad at the plate, they should really just be subjected to Javi.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, God, they're so bad. And I gave him so many chances. And I don't want him to be bad. I want him to be great because I want people to watch him play defense.
Yeah.
But my God.
You know what? How old was Javi Guerra when he had his 20 home run season at single A or whatever?
A teenager, right?
He couldn't have been that old, right? I wonder what the projections were on him back then.
Well, we also have...
And considering high A is supposed to be no different than low A, it's weird.
Well, here's the difference.
Quality of pitching.
There were a couple smart people that said that park favored lefties and would give unreasonable power outlooks for Javi Guerra.
Yeah.
And then that wasn't the same thing for Tatis. Because Tatis, remember, was playing in the Midwest League and skipped the Cal League. And then he went straight to Texas. So.
Yeah. How old is Javi Guerra? I don't even know. He's not that old. 22, he's like 21, right?
21, 22.
Huh.
I don't know. He feels like he's 40. He's been around forever,
right? He really does. He's 22 right now.
22.
When did we trade for him? Like 2016. So that's 2 years ago. Yeah. God. So he was 19 when he had his big year for the Red Sox.
It seriously feels like a lifetime ago.
God, yeah. He's feels like he should be 30.
I'm so much closer to death yeah. since then.
But you've watched him at Elsinore. Like, yeah. I actually have no doubt that he could be called up and play the position fine.
Oh, he'd be
there'd
amazing.
Be some throwing errors, I think. But
he did this thing where I watched him anyway. And I mean, like, this is where I get into the habit of saying this is what happened when I watched him. And I did see him in over a dozen games, but clearly I've missed a bunch of things because I miss a bunch of things with everybody because I'm not a trained evaluator. But he looked super nonchalant on everything to the point where I was thinking he was just kind of goofing around out there.
Yeah.
And apparently he fixed that the next year, which I didn't go to a lot of games the following year. But he would basically take his time on things because he knew he could do it. And it was the opposite with Renfro. Renfro would take his time, but he'd be like baiting single A guys or high A guys
to run
because he could just throw them out from anywhere on the field. And I kind of watched that and I said, yeah, he's just playing with them. Like, his arm can play.
Yeah.
And his defense looked okay. And then he just cruised through the minor leagues and was actually a good defender. And Javi is the absolute opposite. I was just like, this guy could be so much better if he just, like, showed a little effort. But in fact, it could just be it bored him and he was working on something else. Like,
yeah.
Who knows? There's a million other possibilities. And then he also made just complete lights out plays at short. And again, I'm comparing a right fielder to a shortstop. So, I mean, the degree of difficulty is tenfold at shortstop. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I was actually a little excited because Galvis threw his glove. He didn't get ejected today, right? But he's probably gonna get suspended.
Suspended or
right?
fined.
So they Ooh. Don't have a backup shortstop, right? And Javi Guerra is on
oh,
the
no,
40
no.
man.
They do.
Dusty Coleman's on the 40 man, right? Who's the backup shortstop?
It's everyone's favorite utility infielder.
Chase Headley?
Oh, damn, that makes me really sad.
Corey Spangenberg?
Spangenberg.
He doesn't play shortstop.
They'll put him there in a pinch, right?
That would be worse than Will Middlebrooks at shortstop.
I mean, like...
That's worse than Jed Jerko at shortstop.
I mean, like, I love Corey Spangenberg.
Did you watch him? No, you probably didn't watch him today. He's awful. He's just awful.
No, I watched highlights.
Okay.
So, like, I love Corey Spangenberg. Marver can tell you. We watched
Marver
him at spring...
loves Spangenberg.
No, we watched him at spring training. He had, like, the quickest hands I've ever seen at the plate. He also was one of the stiffest infielders I've ever watched at second. And, I mean, it was, like, painful to watch him. Like, there's growing pains, and then there's, like, I don't know if he's going to be able to adjust to this. And he was really bad at second,
yeah.
in my opinion. And his natural position is third and short, right? He played short, too, at some point in college?
Or maybe in college, but the Padres have never... Because that...
Like, they would never...
That was always a question
yeah.
when the shortstop sucked, is why not just stick Spangenberg there? And it tells you that he's so bad... that they would rather have put Yankovic Solarte there than him. Or Jed Jerko. Or...
Well, I think it's more that like they were trying to groom him for one of the two positions and they just couldn't find a home for him. And that, I think that's part of the problem too. Like when you're bouncing around and like getting starts in the outfield too, like I think he'd actually be a decent outfielder if he was just given like more than a week to actually concentrate on that. And I think that's the problem. He's a good utility player to have. Like he hits fairly well, at least average. He creates a speed threat. And if you stuck him in a position, I feel like he would be decent. But as it is now, he's just a late inning substitute because of the way they've basically developed him.
Right.
And he is, as a natural third baseman, that's where he was drafted at, I believe. He's just painful to watch there. There's that one where he made the diving play. I can't remember what game this was, but he made a diving play, got up with plenty of time and almost threw it over Hosmer's head and
yeah.
then threw a routine one over Hosmer's head. And then that same game, and like, by the way, when he dove for it, he was basically just falling over. It should have been like one step and a backhand. And like I said on Twitter, I mean, I should critique a major leaguer's defense because I got hit in the head with a softball. But then later in the game, he's playing maybe 8-10 feet off of the bag. And a ball is like roped down the line and clearly fouled by like a foot or two.
Yeah.
And he like falls over diving, not diving, but like falls over. As if he was going to make a play on it. And to me, it was just like, this is like no instinct at third because he doesn't have enough experience there at this point. I don't know what to think about him. And then that's the thing is, who do you have play short if Galvis goes down?
Guerra.
It's got to be it, right?
He's on the 40 man. They've kept him on there for 2 years.
That's got to be the only reason, honestly. It's got to be like, especially after today, or actually after that AC article talking about how Richard loves him because you actually feel confident with a defender in the back. Mm. I'm like, well, maybe just get better defenders in general. But yeah, I think that might actually have some legs to it.
I don't think Dusty Coleman's on the 40-man. So I'm checking now, but I'm pretty sure he's not.
Either way, I would love to see Guerra. Guerra would be fun.
I think it'd be fun. I want to see him. I want to see him field. He's going to hit really awfully. It's going to be really ugly.
I mean, remember, I'm a huge Franchi Cordero fan. I mean, like, I want to see him hit despite the fact that he's going to strike out like 30 to 40% of the time.
Yeah.
So, like, I want to see him hit every single game. I mean, this is a lost season. Who cares?
Today.
Sorry. 500 season.
This is Uncle Ron would be pretty cross. Uncle, yeah, he would not. Today was really classic Franchi in that just like there's this really great thing, something really awful.
Actually, I'm pretty sure. Now that we're talking about Franchi, I think he's the only Padre on my fantasy team.
Oh, I was going to pick him up today.
So I don't really do much fantasy baseball. Like we actually have like a problem in my league where I picked up a bunch of like rookies.
Yeah.
Because I would follow like the top 100 and just pick them up for $1 off the waiver wire. And so I did that this year, but everyone blocks me normally. So like they'll bid like $8 for someone that's like barely worth a dollar.
Right.
So I have guys like Alfaro, which I got like later, but yeah, I have Acuna, I have Tatis, I have Senzel, I have I have him, I have Franchi. I got them all for $1 because that's just what I do, and I'm awful in my league. It's just guys I like to watch.
I tried to do that also. I have Tatis on my roster also, but
well, it became a thing after I got Harper and Trout in the same year.
Yeah,
and then they just blocked me. But I just do it mostly to follow them because it's the only way I follow baseball normally is like if I get alerts on my phone.
Yeah.
So I'm just too busy these days. But no, Franchi's one of those guys, like, throw him in every day. Let him just do his thing. I don't really care.
I don't either.
And just let him play great defense and let him strike out a ton and let him hit bombs.
So this is the last thing, I guess. So Margot's on the DL.
Yeah.
He's not hitting well at all. I think there's this assumption that Margot is definitely a good player for the next good team. Like he's kind of like, I said that Tatis is like the third rail topic of Padres Twitter in that when you say anything negative about him, it's viewed very poorly.
Yeah.
But I think the same goes for Margot because there's just this ongoing assumption that Margot will work. He's there. He will be on the next World Series team. And he's got a lot of skills that make you think that. Like, he's a great fielder. He's fast. He's seems smart. But he's gone through some slumps. I mean,
he hasn't pieced it together is the problem.
Right.
Like, on defense, offense,
and Green, you know, mismanages his role, I think, putting him in leadoff when he's not shown any ability to get on base. So
Gennaro said that too. He's like, there's nothing.
Gennaro's really big on that.
Yeah, he said there's like nothing more painful than watching this guy lead off or something like that.
Yeah,
which I totally agree with.
Especially when the reason is, oh, well, because he's fast.
That's a stupid reason.
It's very stupid, yeah. So Franchi's a guy whose tools that a lot of us like to dream on. I mean, is it crazy to think that Margot might not be the next good center fielder for the next good team? I mean,
okay, so you've caught me at a... So I love defense. So I think he's the center fielder for the future because I want up the middle defense. So it's one of the reasons where I kind of jokingly say, and this is why the third rail topic at Tatis, I always get on the bad side of Padres Twitter. I believe Oscar's told me to fuck off several times.
Yeah.
Sorry, now we're having an explicit tag. But anyway, so the reason that this kind of falls flat to me is that I think he is great and that he plays really good defense. I don't think he's... I think, like a lot of people, he makes really great plays, and he also makes things a real huge adventure when he shouldn't. He drops a lot of routine things from what I've watched. And maybe that's just selective. That's just like me selecting certain things and expecting more from him. But
yeah, I haven't seen that. But, I mean, his arm is pretty weak.
His arm's weak.
Very underwhelmed by
his arm. I don't expect much. That's fine. I mean, like Trout's a super good center fielder, and he has a garbage arm too. Like, that doesn't surprise me. Or doesn't concern me, I should say. But my thing is that he makes everything kind of an adventure in all aspects of his game. Like, he has elite speed, And he gets thrown out a ton on the bases. And he seems to have no knowledge of when he's going to be going or when he should be stealing.
Right.
He steals against guys that he shouldn't be stealing against. I think Dustin had a great article
on that. Yeah.
So he does weird things like that. And then also he swings when he shouldn't be. Like, I could be screaming at the TV, me knowing it, and I'm wondering why he doesn't. He's an elite athlete. So I think he has a place. But again, this comes down to the Tatis factor. It's like, they expect him to be amazing and like a top of the lineup presence. I don't know if he's that, and I don't think you should force him to be that.
Right.
I think you should let him be what he's going to be, and then you find out what that is and kind of build around it. And the problem is that like everyone expects him to be amazing.
Right.
And it's the same thing with Tatis and all these other guys. So like Hedges, I mean, I love Austin Hedges. That guy can't hit at all.
Yeah.
And he hit like for 1 year and people flipped out.
And you can have some guys that don't hit.
Yeah.
But you need...
Like, especially the catcher.
And center fielder. Like, center fielder traditionally doesn't hit that well.
I mean, like, shortstop typically doesn't either, although I guess we're seeing kind of a renaissance in that. I think that's the other problem, is that we see guys like Correa and all these other people that are really, really good on defense. That's not traditionally what you would have there.
Right.
And we're trying to build a lineup around this, like, unicorn of a player, and it makes no sense to me. And so, yeah, like, I want up-the-middle defense. All the way. Like, Urias can play second. He's good. Like, the fact they're sending him over to short was kind of concerning to me. Although I guess he could play in a pinch, whatever. But he's good enough there. I really like having a solid defense short. And then you've got Hedges, who's an elite catcher. And then Margot, who's good, very good, if not excellent, if he gets his stuff together.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm okay with it, even if he can't hit his way out of a wet paper bag. So... I'm okay with it. And
okay.
Well, the thing is that the big thing we should be asking is why is Perella playing or taking away at bats from guys like...
You know where I fall on the Perella
topic. I like Perella. I think he should be playing so you could trade him.
But I will say that I don't think Perella necessarily will work out.
No.
All I said is that I think you give him a couple months to fail.
That was just my way to get in a parting shot at Marver. But that's no, right. I actually like him, and I think you should give him as many starts as possible to get his trade value up, if that's what it is, or if not, you just get rid of him.
Right.
Because he either amounts to something you can get rid of or not. But really, just the big concern is you can't have Myers, it's a big contract, Renfro and Franchi in the same lineup. It just doesn't work. I actually think Jankowski's kind of gotten the short end of the stick. I think he has a bench player role.
No, let's not get crazy about that.
Well, I like defense, like I said. So if Spangenberg has a place, I don't know why someone like that doesn't even it out.
Yeah, AJ hasn't really shown that much interest in defense.
No defense.
Except for Galvis, really.
And I mean, now you know why I'm not on Team Rockstar GM. So, yeah.
I mean, he did keep Hedges, so there's that, right?
For now.
Yeah.
For now.
For now.
He's drafting a lot of catchers.
I know, he really is. That is a little concerning. Scary, yeah.
I mean, like, for Team Swoon, like, this is not good for us.
No, not at all. He's got Camposano on the fast track. He, you know. Austin Allen's got a big bat and one of the worst catcher gloves I've ever seen.
So oh, it's bad.
He's a real AJ guy.
I'm glad that you saw that. Yeah.
I saw...
It's not
I mean,
good.
I'm not a scout, but...
He's a DH.
I saw literally the worst catching defense I've ever seen. Both arms.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Awareness around the plate on foul balls, like it's.
I didn't see that.
Balls bouncing out of his mitt, like pop ups bouncing out of his mitt, like he's bad. He's really bad.
Yeah. He can hit them.
He can hit, yeah. I mean, so far, but he seems like an AJ guy. All hit, power.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, and granted, I'm not getting paid for this, but I just, I mean, like, I used to pitch and I hated watching my up the middle guys make errors. Like the last start that I made was adult league baseball. And it was like Wood Bat League. And there were, I think it was, I counted them out. There were 12 errors when I pitched three innings as an emergency player. And then I blew out my shoulder doing it. Like, I couldn't pitch for like 2 years. So that's why I hate it. It's my own experience. It's checkered by my past.
Your shoulder should be bitter about that.
My shoulder hates life right now.
Well, that's actually all I've got. This is a mega episode so far.
Yeah, it's turned from like, let's chat briefly to...
Yeah, I mean, there's a wide variety of topics here. It went from there's some dad chat, there's some beer chat.
We could do dad chat as a separate
podcast. We really could. I've said for a while there should be a Padres Twitter dad chat podcast.
You already started Meat Twitter, Padres Meat Twitter, so Padres dad chat's
next. It really took off. Yeah, Padres dad Twitter, I think, could be big. You know, there was a touch of that with how awful Disneyland was yesterday.
We had some haters on that.
You know...
They didn't think
purely
you were really seeing the magical nature of it.
This is going to come off as controversial, but adult guy that's too into Disneyland is not someone that I'm actively seeking out in life to hang out with. That's not to say they're bad people. They're just not my cup of tea, right? So
when you turn this off, you can tell me they're bad people. That's cool.
It's just not, that's not what I'm into. I'm a grown up. I don't need to fawn over the teacup ride at Disneyland or...
Yeah.
The thing is...
All the secrets of Disneyland.
Yeah. The thing is, my kid had a fine time there. Your kid has had a fine time there, right?
Yeah.
But they also would have had a fine time at the zoo, which I have an annual pass for already.
A fraction of the cost.
Or they would have had a fine time at Playworks Indoor Gym. Or playground, right? It's $9 for us to go there.
Stagecoach Park.
Yeah, or the park right down there. Like, she would have a fine time there.
Yeah.
And honestly, I paid for the character breakfast at one of the hotels.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a terrible value, but it's a good value in the respect that I think I could get away with not going to Disneyland and taking her for a birthday to a character breakfast.
Okay.
I'd be out $120 for us to go.
It's a lot cheaper than tickets for both of you to a full Disneyland experience.
It's $400 to go
and not soul sucking.
Yeah. I think I could get away with that. I think I could get away with hiring an Elsa impersonator to come to the park over there, and I'd get equal credit and equal joy out of my kid.
See, here's the difference. Those people are trained professionals. You're really playing fast and loose with that, with your money there.
Look, let's not talk like it's challenging to be a Disney princess. I watched them all day yesterday.
Oh man, now you're really going to bring down the
head. They're good. Look, they're good at Disneyland. They're not amateurs there, but the marginal utility difference between them is not that great.
Oh, I love
Legoland is right down the street. Do you think your kid has an arguably worse time at Legoland?
I've never been to Legoland.
What are you doing? There's a water park there.
I know. There's an aquarium there.
Yeah, you know.
I pay for the aquarium pass.
The aquarium's great. It's really great. That's a real parenting secret we should talk about. Is the Legoland aquarium is a great.
Yeah, I know.
Diversion for children. It's made for.
Oh
them.
Man, it's made for. It's yeah. I
There's
know.
No educational value at all. No.
I mean, like I go to the Scripps one because my kid loves that. Yeah. And like I'm really missing out. So I haven't been at all. Me like not with kids, not ever. I have friends that work there.
Yeah.
Still haven't been.
You know, an annual pass is the same, pretty much the same cost as what a ticket to Disneyland was for me yesterday.
Well, and they have them discounted at Costco too. I found out. I priced it out the other day. It's really cheap.
Really cheap. And you're getting a water park.
And I get a
You're getting
a discount.
Water park out of this also.
Oh, man,
they have a wave pool. Your kid would
I'm just losing money. I'm throwing away money.
Here's the other thing. Disneyland, you need to be an active participant in most of it. Like you're waiting in line. You're waiting. You're standing there with the princesses at Legoland. You can take them to Duplo Funtown or the Lego. They just have a room full of Legos and you can just sit there. And you know how sometimes it's nice to buy yourself some phone time. Right?
Oh, I mean, I went to the Fleet Science Center. What was that? I guess that was Saturday or Sunday. And all we did, I sat down and they have a bunch of PVC pipes the kids can put together and Legos.
Yeah.
And it bought me an hour. Yeah.
This is why I like the Escondido Discovery Museum, because they have stuff you can just sit them down.
Yeah.
There's benches, and that's a little me time.
And this is the me time is me bitching on Padres Twitter time, because it's the only time I get to go on there and just really start a ruckus.
Right.
People don't like me on there anymore, because I've grown really jaded and
you've
angry.
You've got to pick your spots. You've got this window that's open, and you need to maximize
it. I chose a really bad one today, which is right after deliveries, I decided, you know what a really good idea would be? To not defend throwing at a person. It was a huge mistake. I didn't think that one through. Cooler heads did not prevail.
Well, I think we built the grounds for Padres Dad Twitter.
I think we'll
get this going.
He's a new hashtag.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we all had a nice episode with no Marver.
No Marver.
Regardless of what Leisure Fryer says,
he's
decrepit... just fossil of a human being.
Well, the great thing, though, is now Marver's going to come back strong on Twitter and really shame me.
He really will.
Really excited about
it's going to be great.
I love him.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll issue some more promises about how he'll have moved here by Christmas, and his Keith Law manifesto will be out by Christmas.
He better. I mean, he's promising for months, and then he did give us the video, remember?
He did. He
invited me to watch it, so.
He did, yeah.
It will happen. By next decade.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for coming by, I guess not Jagoff Manor anymore. It's H.J. Preller Manor over here.
Oh, but, that's right.
But welcome to the humble abode, and before you move, we'll try to do another podcast.
We shall.
And yeah,
maybe a bounce house.
Thanks for coming by and doing an hour and a half of podcasting
Holy
here.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
All right, no worries.
All right, well, for another edition of the Gwintelligence podcast, go Padres.